Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, slim and none, and slim's out of town.
Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated and never duplicated, 37 plus years now of radio presence. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, the Dan Patrick Channel, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. You can be listening to the show live, you can listen to delayed in podcasts, of course, podcasts all over the place. Apple iTunes, Anchor.com, of course, there's also Google Talk, all kinds of crazy stuff. Bottom line is, you can catch Ring Talk all over the world, delayed or live. Of course, straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. We're talking this hour, boxing and MMA, and I will bring in, an interesting guy at about 20 minutes past hour. His name is Keith McMurray. Now, his father caused a bit of an international incident back in 1974 when he cut George Foreman. Of course, he was George Foreman's sparring partner. I'm talking about Bill McMurray. He cut George Foreman. Of course, that delayed the fight down there in Africa. I'm talking about Zaire, Africa. Of course, the fight was supposed to take place in early in September, I believe, and it took place in October. But at the end of the day, when George Foreman got cut, he decided, guess what? I'm going to go home for 3 or 4 weeks and, let my cut heal. So he went to the airport, but President Mobutu said, no, I'm not giving you your passport. You're not getting on no plane. I invested $6 million in this fight. You're not going anywhere. So George Foreman had to stay in Africa. And, of course, the fight would take place. Ali would knock him out in the eighth round. So we'll spend some time with Bill McMurray's kid. He's a bit of a boxer, a hero, a character, you name it. He's also a Christian. I'm talking about Keith McMurray at about 20 minutes past hour. Main event matters. St. Louis Matt comes to us at 40 minutes past hour. Lots of stuff to talk about. Open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
You didn't tell Dad your family was coming.
Well, he never warns me when he is. So I feel like I owe him nothing.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Smoking hot!
Some East Bay Soul, another variation of Tower of Power. East Bay Soul, of course, the band leader, the Greg Adams. Check them out, eastbaysoul.com. Their show and concerts, they're having like concerts in Greg's front room down there in LA, like every Friday night, I think. So check them out on Facebook or go to their website, eastbaysoul.com. Straight up, good weekend of boxing. I thought one of the biggest upsets of the weekend, at least in my mind, was George Kambosos, of course, from Australia, Manny Pacquiao, sparring partner, now 19-0, 10 KOs, goes into the UK, fights a guy that they're supposed to win. I mean, he's supposed to win. We're fighting in Wembley Arena. He's supposed to win. But Leo Selby came in, how can I put this, 28-2. Obviously left 28-3. Lost a split decision. The scores were 118-110, 116-112, and 115-114. I had it 115-112. I scored the fight for Kambosos. I thought he deserved when he was aggressive throughout. And you know what pisses me off is those British guys, the hacks. I mean, they're going, oh, we can't believe he lost. We had him winning by all these points. And, you know, bottom line is you need to be a little bit more objective and stop doing the homer thing. In other words, the guy that's supposed to win doesn't always win. That's what happened yesterday when Kambosos beat Leo Selby. No doubt about that. Now, the rest of the weekend, of course, the Tank. What can I say about the Tank? You have to be super impressed with the Tank, of course, coming up with that uppercut. And then being classy in the post-fight, post-fight interviews. And he did several of them, and he was classy in all of them. Didn't wear a suit and tie like Teofimo Lopez did a fortnight ago, but that's not him. That's not Gervonta Davis. You know, he's a kid from the hood, and I thought he represented himself real well last night as far as his speaking. And, you know, and it's important because, you know, I know boxing needs thugs per se. I mean, needs rough guys that knock people out and that kind of good stuff. But they don't have to be turds as far as turds in real life is concerned, okay? And I don't think this young man's a turd. I think he's a good-looking fighter, no doubt about that. Now, some of the best fighters of the weekend, did they appear? Maybe not. Maybe it wasn't the biggest, greatest weekend as far as quality was concerned. But there was a lot of quantity. There's no doubt about that, a lot of quantity. And, of course, as I said, boxing started at 11 a.m. yesterday Pacific time, and it went all the way until like 9 o'clock Pacific time. So that's 10 hours. That's a long, long time. Now, let's go back to the heavyweight main event across the pond. Oleg Usyk won a decision, a unanimous nod across the board against Derek Chisora. Chisora rattled him in the first few rounds. In fact, Derek Chisora was kicking his butt. Oleg Usyk, like Larry Merchant said in hour number one, he wasn't surprised. He cannot hang with the big boys because the big boys are big. He used to be a former 200-pound champion. Big difference between fighting guys at 200 pounds and fighting guys at 235, 240. And, of course, you got guys like Anthony Joshua who sometimes come in as high as 250 and Tyson Fury weighing in the 250s. Of course, those guys being 6'8 and 6'10 respectively. But Oleg Usyk, he sort of sputtered. That's the best way I can put it. He sputtered yesterday. Still undefeated, but he sputtered. And that was an IBF and I think a WBO Continental Americas eliminator, something like that. Anyway, bottom line is, they didn't rock and roll all that well. As I said, Naneo Inoue, a spectacular fighter, no doubt about that. He is a guy from Japan. He's a man from the land of the sun, undefeated now, 20-0, like 12-13 wax. Jason Maloney came in. He was game. He had only lost one fight, and he came in. I mean, he came in, he gave it his all. But, you know, you sort of looked at the odds yesterday. These guys were like 10 or 15 to one underdogs, so probably it wasn't going to happen. I think the best fight on the as far as the entire weekend or Saturday was concerned, was as far as odds were concerned, was the Gervonta Davis-Leo Santa Cruz fight. And, that was a 6-1 fight. That was a 6-1 fight. So let me put it to you like this. Muhammad Ali was a 3.5, 4-1 underdog to Sonny Liston, or Cassius Clay was a 3.5 to 4-1 underdog to Sonny Liston when he upset him back in 1964. So 7-1 is long odds, no doubt about that. But Inoue was successful, no doubt about that. Usyk, as I said, not going to be no longer the Charles Manson of the heavyweight division. He was the Charles Manson of the junior heavyweight division, the cruiserweight division. Outside of that, he's not a heavyweight to deal with. On Friday night, Jaime Munguia, former WBA 154-pound champion, now fighting 160 pounds, took on a guy by the name of Toronto Johnson. Toronto was tough. He stopped him inside the distance. Am I supposed to get impressed? No, I wasn't impressed. I just wasn't. I'm not impressed with Jaime Munguia. I mean, former WBA 154-pound champion. I thought there were fights he lost at 154. I thought that fight he lost at 154. I can't remember the guy he fought against, but he loses at 154. And then he goes to 160, and the poor guy that beats him at 154, instead of getting a rematch at 154, he has to move up to 160 and fight one of the Charlo brothers. So I just didn't think that was fair at all. The guy he should have got the elevator and said he got the shaft. Should have got the penthouse and said he got the outhouse. Straight up, that's the way boxing is. I tried to explain this to you before. People say to me, getting robbed, getting ripped. What's it like getting robbed? Well, I will explain this to you time and time and time again. This is the easiest way I can put it to you. It's like playing blackjack or 21 if you're in the hood, okay? But you're playing blackjack and you've got the king and the ace. Happens to be ace of spades, king of spades. Let's make it look good, okay? And you say blackjack. And you say, man, automatic winner, no doubt about that. And then the guy with the 17, he ends up taking all the money. You say to yourself, WTH? What's going on? And that's what's going on. Is that you've just been shafted in the world of boxing. In other words, you had a 21. There was no doubt about it. You had the blackjack. But the guy was 17 beat you. That's just the way it is. And speaking of boxing, you know, boxing's never been a sport that's really built on winners. It's just not. It's been built on losers to an extent. And I learned how to fight beating on losers. I mean, going out to the valley. I remember going out to the valley, going to places like Reno. And then one fight in Seattle. I learned a lot fighting in Seattle. And no doubt about that. But, you know, when you go on the road, and you go on the road, especially at the last minute, a lot of these fights I would take at the last minute because Otis would tell me, listen, the guy's a bum. That's what Otis would say. The guy's a bum. The guy's a bum. The guy's a bum. So Otis Grimble, as I said, was the former Golden Glove president, former late Sacramento policeman, ended up committing suicide. Anyway, he talked me into several fights, and I said, most of the times I won. I mean, I remember that one fight I lost down there by disqualification in Turlock. That was like crazy. I remember my corner man for that night, Harry. Howard telling me, man, we in Turlock, you got to do more. Well, I was doing as much as I was kicking this guy's butt. But the bottom line is, they didn't want it to be that way, and they disqualified me in the third round. Why? Because the other guy, his eye was hanging apart. He was all busted up. Anyway, the bottom line is, I remember when Otis called me into that fight, To fight the Ford Ore champion and the Ford Ore welterweight champion, and he was fighting an over-the-weight match, so I guess he was about 152, and they told me I wasn't fighting at the Manuva Festival. I was supposed to be the main event at the Manuva Festival over there at the Alameda County Fairgrounds in Livermore, but the guy pulled out the day before. So when the guy pulled out the day before, I went and spent some time with my girlfriend tonight, you know, had a good time, this and that, maybe blew a couple of joints on the way over to the fights that afternoon. So I get to the fights. And Otis says, we want you to main event. I said, Otis, man, I'm like way overweight. Now, if I was 139, probably like 143 pounds. He goes, no, the weight don't matter. I won't even weigh in. I'm saying, what's going on? He goes, listen, this guy's really, really a bum. I say, oh, come on, Otis. He goes, no, he really is. He's from Ford Orb. He can't fight. He can't spell fight. This guy, I mean, he's terrible. You'll walk right over him. I said, well, I don't think I got my trunks. He goes, I'll get you a pair of trunks. Something about him. So anyway, we put this ragtag, boxing outfit together and we go out there and we fight this guy and I'm breathing. I've got COPD before the first bell rings. I'm out of breath walking up the ring steps. I mean, just the pressure. Now I'm going to realize I'm fighting this guy and I'm really not prepared mentally or physically. You know what I'm saying? No, maybe physically, but not mentally, no doubt about that. I mean, so anyway, here I go into this fight. The first round, I get so tired. It's like, I'm an asthmatic coming back. I mean, I'm coming back to the corner saying to myself, I can't make it another round. And I remember what they did to us. They told me it was going to be 2-minute rounds. Otis promised me 2-minute rounds, and they went 3-minute rounds. And believe me, folks, there's a difference, there's a world difference between 2 minutes and 3 minutes, but that was just, I knew it was a 3-minute round when I was, you know it. You know what I'm saying? You know it. You've been boxing your entire, most of your life, so you just know what a 3-minute round is. And they went 3 minutes, and I went back and I sat down on the stool. I said, you know, that was a 3-minute round. He goes, and my corner man goes, yeah, I know, shut up. And so we went on. Anyway, second round comes out. I end up cutting this guy and I'm cutting him under the eye and I'm dying, you guys. I mean, I'm dying. I'm ready. They're ready. Like they are ready to cart me out of this place. I mean, I look like a senior citizen. I should have oxygen. I mean, I'm just feeling really bad. Maybe a walker even in the ring because my legs are like shaking. I'm not in shape to be fighting. Not mentally. You got to be ready mentally. I wasn't ready mentally. At the end of the day, I stopped him on a cut. I told the referee, hey, he's cut. Referee jumped in, fight's over. I said, yes. Anyway, Otis Grimble, may you rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look in the world of boxing, MMA, coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California. 37 years of knocking out all bums. Now you know why.
One can have a dream, babe.
Two can make a dream so real.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look. Up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
No, it's Keith McMurray, folks. Professional boxer extraordinaire. Of course, we went across the pond together to China back in 1993, I believe. Of course, I went back there in 94 as well. But the bottom line is, during doing some road work, this is what I read in the newspaper, so I'm going to get it from him just a second when we bring him on. But doing some road work, I think, in the East Bay, he came across a house that was burning in the morning, and he went in and he saved a bunch of people. So I read this like in the Oakland Tribune or something like that. I was blown away by it, and I haven't talked to him in like 25 years. So, Keith McMurray, is that story true? And welcome to the show. Keith?
Thank you, Rachel, for having me on. Yes, it's true. Hello.
Yeah, so talk to me about that. So you were running one morning. Where were you at? Vallejo?
No, I was in Richmond. I was right there down the neck in Richmond, California. And I was out on my 6 o'clock early morning jog. And, yes, I seen a house on fire, and I ran around the corner there. And the front of it was on fire, and the back of it was on fire, like somebody had set it on fire. So we tried to get the people out. We couldn't get them out. But a miracle happened, and eventually we were able to enter the house and pull out 11 babies and 2 adults.
Man, that is a hero. Did they give you a little award? Did the city come back and give you a little award for that, Richmond?
Yeah, they were very gracious to me, man. They gave me the key to the city of Richmond, and they gave me a job with the city of Richmond. And it was very great. It turned into a wonderful outcome.
Okay, let's talk about your trip to China now. There were all kinds of rumors about this trip to China, folks. Let me tell you about this. We go over to China. It's going to be the first ever professional boxing card in the People's Republic of China since 1949 and the communist takeover of Mao Zedong. Of course, Mao had been dead. We went and saw him in his tomb there in Tiananmen Square. But the bottom line is Mao is dead. Boxing's coming back. It's 1993. Harold Smith, the con man of con men, who just died in January of this year. He was. No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Harold was the best. Let me tell you, Harold burned me out of $12,000 and I still love Harold.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it goes. That shows you what a good con man Harold was. I mean, so anyway, Harold's putting on this card in People's Republic of China. Okay, Muhammad Ali's going to come over. Leonzo Barber is going to defend this title, this WBO 175-pound championship. And you're coming over as a sparring partner. Now, I was told that you had sold your passport for $2,600. Somebody had the exact figure. Yeah, he sold it for $2,600. I said, he sold his passport? How's he going to get on the plane? So anyway, we get to the airport, and we're at Chinese customs, and then Muhammad Ali says, you know, he's with me, so he walks you on the plane there in China, and then he walks you off the plane and through customs in the United States. Let me tell you, I've never seen anybody walk somebody through customs in my entire life without a passport. How the hell did that come off?
Man, prayer. I was praying like no other, man. They wouldn't let me through. They told me to get out of the airport, and Ali, I could hear this chanting in the background. They were like, Ali, Ali. And it got louder when it got closer to you and I. And when it got, Ali was there, he goes, what's the problem? I said, they wanted me on because someone stole my passport. He goes, he's with me. And they waved me on through. Unbelievable. Yeah. Never seen nothing like that in my life. And I've been fighting all over the country.
But when they waved you through in L.A., though, when they waved you through the United States Customs in L.A., that's when I said to myself, this dude, Muhammad Ali, has more juice than anybody I've ever seen.
Right, he does.
I mean, he was amazing. So what are you doing these days? I know you were doing some drug counseling. Are you still into that?
Yes, I work at a home here. Just recently got hired again. And I'm working with gentlemen who have addiction problems, and we're trying to get them productive back into the mainstream of life and just giving them life skills and teaching them how to be responsible for their actions and having them live a clean and sober life.
You know, my mother, actually, every one of my uncles except one on both sides of the families, there were six uncles in all. Five were stone cold alcoholics. Two grandfathers were alcoholics. One grandfather committed suicide from being on booze the whole 9 years. So I've seen addiction in the family. But what really killed me was when my poor mother was hooked on cigarettes. And she was hooked on cigarettes. And I was working in the jail out there in San Bruno County Jail, teaching school for the Milpitas School District, teaching inmates out there. So anyway, I'm teaching these guys life skills and physical education. And I notice there's one student or two students that are missing in the class. Well, I find out, I go back to the back of the cell block, and this one guy is taking care of this other guy, if you know what I mean by taking care of him. He's taking care of him because he needed a cigarette. And he was willing to do that for a cigarette. So anyway, so when I went home to my mother, I went home to mom's house. She lived in San Bruno as well. I went to mom's house, and I was in tears when I saw her, because here I've been dogging her, telling her, you need to quit, you need to do this, you need to do that. And that's when I saw how strong that addiction was. So I being a policeman, having spent time working in narcotics out there in the Bayview and this and that, I always thought that crack was addictive. Well, I think that meth and cigarettes are like number one, number two, and I haven't seen that. I've seen guys kick crack cocaine overnight. They can't kick cigarettes.
Right. It has more of a stronghold than anything I've seen as well.
Man, that's crazy, man. So are you doing this in Richmond, California?
No, I'm in Northern California. I'm here taking care of my mother who has dementia in Magalia, right next door to Paradise, where they had the campfire a year and a half ago,
yeah,
where the whole town got burned down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right here, and then we just had another fire a few months ago, and we got all evacuated out of here again. So I'm here in Magalia, California, but I'm working out of Oroville, California, where the drug office is. And I'm here, and I have a gym in my garage here, and I'm training out of my garage.
You know, Oroville, California used to have a place called Murder Burgers, right? Murder Burger?
Yeah.
You know why? You know why they called it Murder Burgers? I ate one and almost died on the way home driving down the highway.
That's where your boy Bobby Chacon was from, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he was working out either. Yeah, here's a good Bobby Chacon story. Maybe you heard this one or not. Maybe you haven't. But Sid Tenner was his manager and the front man. Of course, Don Chargan was the promoter, okay? So Bobby says to Sid and to Don Chargan, hey, I need a massage. So Sid goes to the Yellow Pages and gets a massage guy out of the Yellow Pages. So he comes over and Bobby's nude laying on this massage rack out there at the Radisson Hotel there in Sacramento. So he's nude and he's got a towel over his butt and the whole nine yards. And he falls asleep during the massage and he wakes up during the massage and the guy's on top of him and he's nude too.
Oh!
Yeah, exactly. So I said to Bobby, did you ever ask Sid for a massage again? No, I never asked Sid for a massage again after that. But that was a good Bobby Chacon story from the Sacramento, California. Now, you were originally out of Sacramento, correct?
Yeah, Sid Tenner used to train my dad. My dad was Big Bill McMurray, who cut George Foreman's eye at Zaire fighting Africa in 74.
You know,
I know who you're talking about, Sid Tenner.
So I talked about that a little bit earlier. You know, you almost caused an international incident with Muhammad Ali getting back in the country, and your father caused an international incident by cutting George Foreman because George said, well, I'm going to let my eye heal, so I'm going to get on the plane and go home. And Mobutu said, oh, no, you're not. I invested $6 million. You're not getting out of here no way, no how. And Mobutu shut down the airport and took away his passport.
Yep, and he said, anybody walking towards the airport will be shot. And doors all outside your doors. You're right. You're right about that.
So, I mean, you've been all over the world. Well, tell me, what piqued your curiosity? Of all the places you've been, what was the place that really blew your mind?
Well, China and Venezuela, man. Venezuela was beautiful, man. If I can, but I want to go back there. That's one of my goals is to go back to Venezuela. But China, I really like China, Silk Road, and the people there were very humble and nice back in the day then. I'm hearing all kinds of stories now, but Japan was pretty cool. But China and Venezuela is the ones I like. And another one I liked was Sweden. Sweden was pretty sweet as well.
You know, I like Colombia. You like Venezuela, but I love Colombia for the same reasons you love Venezuela. We can get to that at a different time. But the bottom line is Keith McMurray's on the line. They call him Sir Jab-a-Lot, of course. Now, Sir Jab-a-Lot, when you look back at your life now, I mean, you save people's lives. You're working in drug recovery, this and that, man. The highlight of your travels were to China and Venezuela and Sweden and this and that. But, you know, you've done some unique things in your life, man. I mean, you really have. And you're not just your typical boxer, per se.
Well, that's because I got a spiritual base. You know what I'm saying? My Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, my Lord and King, he directs my steps. And if it wasn't for him, I would have been gone. Because, you know, I haven't always lived a perfect life. I had some problems, but God always kept me grounded and rooted. And that's why I can say I had the extraordinary life that I had, because I'm blessed by the best.
Well, I tell you what, we're blessed to have you, and it was good to hook it up with you once again. And like I say, you were pretty cool in China. Now that we've got the international incident out of the way, the fact that Muhammad Ali walked you through customs, I mean, that was just, I mean, think about that. You have to be like the president of the United States to walk somebody through customs.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the only way I could put it. Keith McMurray, continued success in your drug and rehabilitation counseling. And, of course, as a Christian as well, peace and respect, my young man. Thank you so much for appearing on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Keith McMurray, folks. The man, his father was a hell of a fighter as well. Caused that stir down there in Africa. I kid you not. Anybody walking to the airport will be shot. That's what his dad told him. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking through the world of boxing and MMA. Speaking of boxing, was Floyd Patterson, Floyd Mayweather, having some blood pressure issues last night? Looked like he was going to have a stroke there the first couple of rounds because he couldn't believe his own eyes that Leo Santa Cruz was actually beating Gervonta Davis for the first 6 minutes. Then after that, it was sort of downhill. Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We're switching gears after the break. We'll bring in main event Matt, St. Louis Matt, after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I can get of your sexiness.
and Jack, man. I saw her coming up to me asking me for a date. I says, man, I'm Hot Rod. Are you kidding me? He said, yeah, but aren't you the one that's going to fight Mr. Wonderful? I says, yeah, I'm going to fight Mr. Blunderful. He says, don't you know what he's thinking? Of course. Yeah. Yeah, I know what he's thinking. Absolutely nothing, man. When he's in a room alone, he is all alone. You see, you forget, I rode with him. I know what an idiot this guy is. I know his moves. Oh, yes, he's tough. I know he's tough. You think I ain't, man? I've been around. You know that. I've been there before. He's tough enough to go and bench press 500 pounds. Who really cares, man, huh? Your idea here of a wrestling match here, you got 12 wrestlers around the ring. You got dancing midgets and leathers. You got everything that you've ever wanted in a match.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Heaven help us.
The late Roderick Coombs. Haven't heard Roddy Piper in a while, and I thought that would be sort of cool because I bring in my next guest where he comes to us from St. Louis. St. Louis, Matt. How's life treating you, Matt?
Life is much better, Pedro. I've recovered from the COVID virus, and I'm happy to be alive and happy to be on Ring Talk today.
So, all right, let's talk about this. I mean, how did you know you had the virus, and how did you know you had it?
Well, my wife had it first, and she quarantined alone in her part of the house, and I left food outside the door, and eventually I needed to get tested. We had another exposure, possibly at my daughter's school, so I wanted to take the test to show her that I needed her to be brave when I took it. The test is very necessary. It's 3 seconds of pain, though. It's very difficult, and I was very surprised. I was asymptomatic. They called me and told me I was positive.
Wow, so you didn't suffer from any of those symptoms at all?
No, I didn't have any of the signs out there that we all know about. Fatigue, headaches, aches and pains, loss of taste, appetite, diarrhea, vomiting, this type of thing. I had nothing. So I was surprised, but there was about a 7-day period where I suffered with serious headaches, a lot of fatigue. I would struggle walking up and down the stairs. My body just wasn't working out anymore. I wasn't able to exercise at all. I lost about 15 pounds, but the aches that I had, sense of vertigo, it was more pain than I've ever dealt with. Just imagine the worst hangover you've ever had while you had the flu times 100. That's what it felt like, Pedro. It was hell.
Well, you know, I want to take the president to task, because all this weekend he's saying that Dr. Fauci and these guys are phonies and that they're lying about these deaths in order to make money. I mean, can you believe that? Or give me your spin on that. You're a COVID victim.
Well, I don't believe it, but I think part of his side is to it. Let me just say this. I lost a very, very close friend, probably my best friend, Roger, died. He just missed his 77th birthday. Now, Roger was declining. He was in a wheelchair, and he went to the hospital for unrelated issues. He had COPD, and he left the hospital with COVID. He goes back to the hospital. So did old age kill my friend Roger since he was declining anyway, or was it COVID? Well, it was probably COVID. And he suffered in his last 2-3 weeks of life, his family, his friends, my daughter and I, we couldn't go see him in the hospital. He died miserably and in a lot of pain. So that was COVID. The COVID virus killed him, despite what the president said.
All right. So how do you work it with the wife now? I mean, are you guys are both. Did she have it too?
Yeah, she had it. Her quarantine was over. They give us here in Missouri and throughout the country, I think, 14 days. You're required to be quarantined for when you test positive. Now, I would recommend, probably 3 weeks. Just if you had COVID, after you get out of it, the virus has got to still be there. I think the quarantine period should probably be 3 weeks. We get clear and we can go back to work. But in the meantime, the two of us both missed 2 weeks of work apiece and a lot of time spent with our families and missing a lot of important things in life. But if I had to do it all over again, Pedro, I know it sounds extreme, and despite where some political leaders are, but if I had to do it over again, I would have got a job working from home. I would have had groceries and supplies delivered to my house. I would not have gone out at all. It was that painful.
You know, I am sort of, myself and Scott Cuddy, we sort of hardly don't see people because we're scared. We're both scared. I mean, I had asthma as a kid, this and that, and I'm freaking out. And, you know, I mean, I'm just like, I'm running from the COVID virus. I kid you not. And I remember, you know, running from the AIDS virus back in the late 70s and early 1980s here in San Francisco. You did that by getting a girlfriend, you know what I'm saying, and making sure that you didn't fool around. So there was like no potential of this. But when something's in the air, you don't have any control. In other words, to get AIDS, I had to drop my pants. To get COVID, I don't have to.
Right, COVID is just living a normal, healthy life, and I consider myself healthy, and some other friends that I have who have gotten it live very healthy lifestyles, and it hit them a little bit harder than it did even to me. And if you think you're scared now, Pedro, and Scott's scared, if you had this and you know what a living hell living with this COVID virus is, you'd be a lot more scared of catching it again.
Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little kayfabe. I sort of brought you into this with a little Rowdy Roddy Piper. I haven't watched pro wrestling in over a year and a half, almost 2 years now. I was hooked on, just for a minute there, the Major League Wrestling and Selena and people like that. But then again, I sort of tired of that. And of course, the COVID came along and sort of knocked out the live arenas and this and that. But I just think that when Vince McMahon decided to tell everybody that wrestling was fake, it sort of killed everything. So you can't have the suspended disbelief anymore. You see what I'm trying to say? In other words, when they come into you, in other words, this event's fake. In other words, when he used to go to the wrestling matches at the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis or the Cow Palace in San Francisco, I mean, you went in there, when you walked through the doors, I mean, man, you wanted Pat Patterson to beat Ray Stevens, or you wanted Ray Stevens to beat the Sheik, or you know what I mean, or you wanted Harley Race to win there in St. Louis. So it was, it was suspended disbelief, and that's gone now.
It's gone, and I don't think McMahon has handled it very well since he made those admissions. He just got more cartoony, and that just drove people off, even though there was that big boom period where everybody had a silly name and a silly gimmick. But wrestling is getting more serious. I just got done watching the Ring of Honor Pure Tournament,
mm-hmm.
a title that they brought back after 14 years. They had very specific rules, no outside interference, only so many rope breaks, close fists. If you did it more than once, you're disqualified. And they're out there in the wrestling. It's not gimmick matches. It's professional wrestling. And I'm not so much suspending my disbelief anymore, but I'm enjoying the art of wrestling. And I know you appreciate the art of wrestling too, Pedro.
Yeah, I do. Because, you know, those guys are taking bumps 6 nights a week, and then they're partying after the cards and all. What a life. I mean, I don't need to go into Ric Flair, but Rowdy Roddy Piper, I mean, Piper, I read some of his book, and, you know, I heard some interviews with him about the cocaine and the steroids and the whole nine yards. I mean, life as a wrestler in the 80s and 90s was bizarre.
I started watching wrestling, Pedro, in the mid-70s, so I know a lot of these guys were aged, but the men who died under 60 years old, I think probably half of the wrestlers that I grew up watching are all dead because of the abuse they put themselves through. That included probably, unfortunately, Road Warrior Animal, great guy, somebody I met before. We had the same barber for several years. But obviously, there was a lot of steroids and drugs and partying going on back in his day. He lost his partner, you know, it's been 15 or more years ago now. And it had to stop, at least that part of it. So, you know, drug testing could have never been a part of that era. But now the fact that they're at least trying with the concussions and the drugs, maybe this will be a thing of the past, or at least less frequently hear about young people passing away.
Real live tough guy that passed away young, Rick Rude. My good Lord. I mean, he was taking those domas or those somas, they call them. They're like muscle relaxers, like volumes, and you take them sort of come down at night when you're all peaked up on steroids. Cause, you know, the guys I know that have been on steroids that have admitted to me they've been on steroids, it's sort of like having a generator going in your blood all the time. I mean, you can't stop. These steroids are moving you. You know you're on steroids.
Harley Race mentions in his book when he was with the WWF, one of the British Bulldogs gave him some steroids. And as he lay there trying to sleep at night, he was unable to do so because he could feel his body growing. So Harley Race never had a problem with that after that because it just really frightened him.
Okay. We talked earlier about, you and I, about Khabib retiring 29-0, 89-0, 90-0, whatever he is. He never lost a fight in his life. He was wrestling bears and animals and that kind of good stuff at the age of 12. Of course, his father passed away. He said he really doesn't have the heart for fighting anymore. He comes off the win over Justin Gaethje in the second round, in which he mercifully stopped Justin Gaethje. He didn't beat him up. He mercifully stopped him. So he's allegedly done, unless he can put together a GSP fight. What are the possibilities of that, Matt?
Well, GSP has kind of always left the door open for possibly coming back. I think Khabib just needs to have some time. Khabib is dropping too much weight. He's having these difficult camps. He's coming in overweight. And I think he could be even a better fighter if he didn't have to drop so much weight. I would almost like to see, Meltzer seems to think that Khabib is about 193, 194 pounds walking around. And that GSP is probably about 185 to 190. Why don't they just have a fight at 185 or 175 pounds? Why should they have to drop 40 pounds just to have a match? And then by the time they get there, it's only 20 pounds. They could still be 20, 25 pounds different.
Well, I've got an issue with guys. Listen, I got spanked by bigger guys. I mean, they don't look like, this guy doesn't look too much bigger than me. But guess what? You feel it. Hector Martinez told me he could feel it when guys were 2 or 3 pounds bigger than him. I mean, that's why they have weight classes. Of course, last night, Gervonta Davis knocking out Leo Santa Cruz with that one great uppercut. In fact, another great uppercut earlier in the year was Dillian White getting knocked out by Alexander Povetkin. I mean, this was some pretty good knockouts for a dead boxing year, huh?
I've been enjoying boxing here lately. I got to see that uppercut. I didn't see the whole fight yet, but I woke up, I saw that uppercut. If anybody's missed that, you have to see it. I mean, he knocked that guy pretty much under the canvas, out of the ring. The legs bent back. He's out.
Yeah, you know, when the legs bent back, that's really, 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 I mean to say it, it's scary. Because you're concussed. People don't realize what getting knocked out is. It's like being neurologically short-circuited temporarily. The lights are out.
I had Anderson Silva up last night going into the fourth round, and we talked about other guys, Chuck Liddell, Roy Jones Jr., having a weak chin as they got aged. At 45 years old, can any fighter have a chin at all?
Listen, he shouldn't be fighting no more. He shouldn't be fighting no more. November the 7th, Devin Haney, the undefeated fighter, of course, originally from San Francisco, now fighting out of Vegas to take on Yuri Gamboa. When you look at these lightweights like Teofimo Lopez and the kid last night, Gervonta Davis, Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, anybody jump out for you, main event, Matt?
I'm not sure. I was pretty impressed with that fight we saw 2 weeks ago on ESPN. And I was fortunate enough that I went with Socrates and picked the right guy in that fight against Lomachenko. But how is boxing going to get more popular? Is the zone going to go away? Are they going to file for bankruptcy if they get sued by the fighters if they can no longer pay?
That's a good question, but, you know, DAZN sort of ticking me off because I'm not a big Barry Hearn fan. I think that's his name, the promoter. I'm not a big fan of his. And, you know, like yesterday, I will give him this. The fight started at 11 o'clock a.m. and they ended like at 4 o'clock. So that was 5 hours of boxing. And if you're a boxing freak and you've been going without, I mean, that's a whole big long plate of boxing for you. A whole lot of not really credible fights. But the bottom line is, you know, there were some fights on TV. So the competition is supposed to get better, but can they get better? Can they get better without a live crowd? Looks like the rematch we talked about, Alexander Povetkin and Dillian White's going to go November 21st. The guy just got knocked out a few weeks ago. They're not even going to give him like the 3 month off.
I keep thinking that I can get used to not having a live crowd at some of these matches, but I keep changing my mind. That goes for wrestling, boxing, and MMA. And I'm watching the UFC yesterday, and they have Bruce Buffer in the ring, you know, screaming out these introductions in a pretty much empty arena. It just didn't feel right. I couldn't get into it as much.
Good point. Main event, Matt, kiss the wife, say hello to the family. You're a great guy, a great father, and what can I say, man? You're a good guy. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
I appreciate it. Everybody, please protect yourself. Bye.
The man knows COVID. That's main event, Matt. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I went to penitentiary. Gene Wilder, I did a movie. I went to, not me personally. I mean, I went to do a film in penitentiary. And it was, I was up there 6 weeks, Arizona State Penitentiary. It was some, oh, you're applauding for that? Arizona State Penitentiary, real popular. Oh, man, it was strange because it's like 80% black people. And what's strange about that is that there are no black people in Arizona.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Clap your hands, sir. Stop being racist. Clap your hands.
The guitar, the mighty talented Jeff Tamalier coming back there at Tower of Power circa 1993. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide November 7th. Live on Fox TV, Luis Ortiz, the Cuban heavyweight, has got about 90, got to be about 75 years old. I think he admits to being like 40, but he's got to be like 75 going on 115. Take on a guy by the name of Alexander Flores. Of course, they're fighting heavyweight November 7th. Wow. Devin Haney, kid from the city by the bay, fighting on the zone. Of course, 24-0, 15 KOs, only 21 years old, still a baby, of course. Considered an incredible fighter. I mean, you know, his skills, the fact that people say he looks like Sugar Ray Leonard, an earlier version of Sugar Ray Leonard, things like that. Those are compliments that don't get passed around too often anyway. He's taking on 30-3, 38-year-old Yuri Gamboa, a former Olympic champion. But the bottom line is Gamboa is older than dirt, and that fight should end inside the distance. Outside of that, it's a good weekend for MMA as well. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, make that 36, 37 plus years now. You're inside looking through the world of boxing and MMA. We come to you Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Saturday for an hour, for an 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, we come to you Sunday. This is a Sunday two-hour show at 11 a.m. Pacific time as well for 2 hours live on Sports Byline. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. You can pick up the podcast and iTunes and, of course, TuneIn.com and all over the place. Bottom line is Anchor.com. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I thank you so much for tuning in to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. There's a million things you can be doing right now, but you're listening to Sports Byline Broadcast Network. The executive producer, Scott Cuddy. This is Ring Talk, baby.